This is a production of Cornell University.
Essay meeting, May 3rd, 2007.
Meeting is called to order, 4:48 p.m. That's official.
Clerk.
Vice President Coombs will conduct open microphone.
It's going to be open straw today. We're pleased to welcome those of you who from the Cornell community to our meeting today. You're all considered non-voting members according to the charter of the Student Assembly. If there's anything anybody would like to bring up today that's not on our agenda for discussion, we would invite you to do so now. Usually we have a microphone set up here, but anybody just wants to stand up and shout it out, that'd be good. Yes, great. Yes. If you could just say your name and your class year for the record.
Yeah, my name is Rebecca Lee. I am a junior. Members of the Student Assembly, I would like to bring to your attention that a group of Asian American student leaders met with Vice President Susan Murphy and Vice Provost Michelle Moody Adams on Wednesday, which was yesterday morning, concerning the lack of institutional recognition for Asian and Asian American students at Cornell. In 2004, a task force report on Cornell's Asian and Asian American students revealed findings that the Asian and Asian American community is the majority of student suicides within the last decade, comprising 11 of the 20 suicides that occurred in 1996 to 2003. The Asian and Asian American student population is the least satisfied upon graduation at Cornell, and Asian students have been victims of prominent bias-related incidents. Despite the task force report recommendations and community efforts, the administration has not managed to fulfill recommendations of, one, creating a community center for those interested in Asian and Asian American issues, two, establishing a specific staff position to address the needs of the Asian American community, and three, expanding the Asian American Studies program to department status. Nearly a quarter of Cornell's student population is Asian, yet Cornell has not provided services at peer institutions such as Yale, Dartmouth, Columbia, and UPenn have. So at the meeting, Murphy stated that this is the first of many meetings, dismissing the thousands of hours that concerned students and faculty members have dedicated to this initiative throughout the past decade. The bureaucratic answer also dismisses the 500-plus students and faculty and staff who have signed a petition that has been circulating the past few days, demanding effective action and provision of institutional support for Cornell's Asian and Asian American community. We see these demands as part of the greater movement on campus for increased opportunity for Asian, Latinos, African Americans, Native Americans, LGBTQ, and all marginalized communities on campus. Diversity can only be achieved if safe spaces are created. So I urge you, as representatives and leaders of the Cornell community, to join us in this cause and pushing the administration to do greater action.
Okay. We have a few comments. Representative Snow.
I just want to say that this is a really important issue, and after meeting with Vice President Murphy a couple of years ago about an LGBT concern, she mentioned that, we're trying to expand the LGBT resource center on the TAQUAD. She said, we're still thinking about an Asian American resource center, and that was more than 2 years ago. So they're really, really strongly on this issue. I think that, this is really something that should be pushed for, so I really support you and I appreciate your comments today.
Yeah, this is something that I think Helen Feng brought up. I'm not sure if she's part of it. Okay. She brought this up when President Skorton came to visit us in the fall semester, actually. To my knowledge, there hasn't been any action taken on it. And you're right. There's been a lot of discussion, but very little action. And you know, if you could actually send me, it looks like you have something written down. If you could send that to me, actually, I just compiled that annual report for the Student Assembly. That's something I'd like to include. It's one of the future issues that we should be looking at. And that report is really important because usually the next year's assembly will look back on it as kind of a jumping off point. So if you could send that to me, then that would be really helpful. But, you know, I also want to apologize because Helen Tseng did make the effort to come to the meeting, and I did make a note of it, but to be honest, I just didn't do anything about it. So I will include that in my report, though. Okay. Is there any other comments? My email address is kmt34, okay. Or just send it to SA.
If anyone has any questions, you can email me at RAL38. If you want to check out the petition, it's online at www.ipetitions.com/petition/CornellAsian. Thank you.
Thanks.
Were there any other members of the community who had anything you'd like to say or add to that?
Let me ask you quickly. I'm Guy Cardozo. I'm a senior. And I was at the meeting yesterday with Kim Murphy. And we basically voiced to her all of our concerns and issues. There hasn't been enough action. The task force took place in 2004. The recommendations for the assistant institution, for the community center, for this has already been made, and they really have not been making, and there have been more suicides since then. I think it's 11 out of 21, or 13 out of 21, or something like that, since then. So it's been getting worse, and really, like, there are people are literally dying because they're not taking steps because of the inaction of the administration, so we really want them to take action and to recognize Asian Americans, and we compare this to other campuses, like Yale, like Dartmouth, they have an assistant institution, they have community centers, and they don't have the same suicide rate, they don't have the same dissatisfaction rate with their Asian American students. So we really feel like that it's time for the administration to recognize us and to recognize our diversity as well. Like, it's that it's not that it includes South Asian, Southeast Asian, and East Asian. And as a Southeast Asian, as an underrepresented minority on campus, we need to remember that Asian Americans are not homogenous either. So we want them to recognize us. And at the meeting yesterday, based on a lot of her comments, we really feel like is kind of out of touch. Like, we basically feel like if there wasn't a system in position for Asian American students, that they would have understood that meeting yesterday would have been a lot more, we would have felt more comfortable, and that we were being more understood by the administration. So we would feel that we would like someone in a higher position in the administration to understand our issues and that. And yeah.
Representative Duke.
For both of you to comment on that, I've heard this concern before, and I'm glad you met with Vice President Susan Murphy. What's your plan from here? You had said that it's the first of many meetings. Are you going to continue to meet with her, or are there other groups that you're talking to? What are you doing in the next couple of months?
Right. She told us that we would consistently get her for many meetings, so we're expecting next semester to meet with her again. But we basically feel that we do need a lot of student support, and we need a lot of show the administration that, because they have said things before, they have sort of like, they've said things before, but we want them to actually take action on it. I mean, it's been 3 years since it happened, and several years before that people have mentioned that the need for this. So, we're definitely planning to have, or they're definitely planning to have a meeting next semester, and we would want them to see more progress, and if we don't see progress, we're going to take other action.
Have you all... Have you all approached the University Diversity Council Working Group about this? Are you familiar with that group? If you send me what you have written there and possibly any more information you want to send me, I can also forward that to them. That's actually a committee of about 7 members that advise President Skorton's committee. So it's basically a direct communication line to President Skorton. So that would be a good group to go through. Representative Self.
Something that Greg mentioned earlier is that a problem in the way I think the administration is interacting with this issue is it's sort of like this parceling out how much resources they're willing to give towards the minority community. It's sort of like, oh, we can't build this LGBT thing because we've got to work on the Asian Americans on this side. And it sort of represents the priority in their thinking that's expected on it. I was wondering what kinds of things Vice President Murphy said to you in response to why hasn't there been a research center bill? Why hasn't it been elevated from a program to a department status? Did she say like funding issues or?
She just said structurally. It was vague. She said structurally it was very complex. Like it wasn't anything specifically. And she was asking us, why do we need it? Like even though the task force report, sort of laid out the issues, but she asked again, like what exactly do we need for it? We told her like these are our concerns.
And I guess this has been such an old issue. You guys might want to look into how what made the LLC get established and the kind of action that was taken to make that happen.
Yeah, because of the nature of Asian Americans, I don't think we're going to chain ourselves to PayPal or anything. having had conversations with Susan Murphy, she had brought up like the issue of funding, talking about how Asians might be able to just feel like general services more so, and using like tasks and all those. But we really want to push the need for like community-based approaches, creating the community center and having like, staff support position.
Yeah, she even mentioned this book, like, what about the women's trade? What about the Office of Minority Educational Affairs? And, we told her, I've been to the Office of Minority Educational Affairs, and it's very nice people, but there's no, at least for Asian Americans, there isn't any resources there. Because, I think it's part of, like, conceptually the model minority idea that Asians don't need any help, that Asians have no problems, and which is very offensive for us. Which is very, we don't like to be spoken, we don't want them to treat us like that.
Representative Hartman.
I just want to answer one of Kate Duke's questions. I actually, the petition that they're bringing forward, I was kind of trying with Rebecca, Brad, Linda, Julie, all the main supporters, to bring this forward next year. And it was their 100 signatures and with my signature resolution, and we can make it as a sense of body of the student assembly to the administration, the concerns of the Asian and Asian American community. With their petition, since I felt it's a lot more influential with the student assembly making it known to the administration. So that's one of the next steps they're going to take, is next year they're going to bring forward the resolution, and hopefully you guys can sign the petition too, because it'd be very supportive.
Is there any other questions or comments?
One of our professors on the Asian American Studies Department had actually emailed President Ford and saying that we don't want to have any Asian Americans in this diversity council. Mm-hmm. And replied saying, well, just because there aren't any Asian Americans or Latinos in there doesn't mean that it's not diverse. And so we feel that it's kind of out of line.
With the a quick comment on that, with the makeup of the diversity council, they're not trying to get everybody, it's impossible, because then you start breaking people down to more and more subgroups, and should this group be recognized, should that group be recognized. Basically, they want to reach out, they want to assemble a group of people that's going to reach out to just everybody who needs it, but not necessarily have that group be representative of everybody. But make sure you guys forward me that information. I'll forward it to the working group, and I'll include it in my annual report, which goes to President's Court, and it goes to VP Murphy. And several other admins. But I thank you all for coming. Or did you have something to tell? Okay. But thank you all for coming.
Yeah, is there... been active open mic today. Is there anybody else who would like to take advantage of that? All right, thank you.
All right, on to approval of the minutes. In your packets, you should have the minutes from the April 5th meeting.
Second.
Are there any amendments to the minutes? If there are, please send them to the clerk in writing. There's been a call for acclamation and a second. Is there any dissent? Okay, the minutes are approved. All right, announcements and reports. First, we have a PR update. Vice President Flicklin.
I really don't have a PR update. I just wanted to thank Kwame, Sarah, Neil, and Calvin for their time on SA. It's been a pleasure working with the four of you. Sarah and Kwame, thank you for serving on the e-board so well, and we're going to miss you, and we wish you the best of luck. Hold your tears for me.
any questions or comments about that?
All right. I have a question about PR. How much money do you have left in your budget? Or how much should I say, did you spend any money in your budget this semester?
All right, moving on. okay, so I have a quick report or update. This past, I think, gosh, I can't even remember what day it was. I haven't slept in the past 3 days, so... but this past one day, we had Wednesday. Wednesday, was it?
Yep.
Okay, we had the assembly reception. And for those of you who left early or weren't able to attend, everybody got a certificate. So right now, I'm just going to call out everyone's names like really quickly. So Daniel Budish was actually there, but he left a little bit early.
I got Mark, too. Thank you. I'll take it.
Double the fun. Dan.
Mark Coombs. David Crockett, who I don't see. Siobhan Dina, that's them. Madeline Ehrlich is not here. Danielle Fernandez.
Yay. And Roger.
Roger Goose. Yeah. Not here. Vincent Hartman, Grace Leonard, Neil Nasargan, Ahmed Salem, Sarah Santana, and Calvin Sell, last but not least. I don't think they knew about you. I'll get you one. I'll get you. Do you want charity? All right, so let's move on to business of, or actually, were there any other announcements or reports?
I just made a quick announcement. I think some of you know, I got some of your signatures beforehand, but I'm in the process of kind of filing fund the student transportation program that we did over spring break. And I'm going to try to do it all for next year. The program needs 50 cents because the student assembly, we borrowed like $3,000 to actually start it up with the seed money. So for next year, we want to expand it, like Jacob Stein getting involved and some other people on campus with the program. But we want to expand it to D.C. and to Philly. And to do that, we need like reserve money to do it. So in the process of trying to get 1,500 seniors to do it. So hopefully, student assembly members will support me in my process of doing this because it's a help to try to get 1,500 seniors. So yeah, so that's my little update of what's going on with the bus program.
First of all, actually, I wanted to thank you, Vince, for putting that whole thing together. That was a great idea. You really did a great job organizing the whole thing. And I still get emails from students and parents about that. So it really was a huge success. And it brought this company a lot of positive things. Mark?
Yeah. I was going to say a lot of exactly what Kwame said. I've also got this, like, it's literally like from thankful fathers talking about how, like, you know, God bless you for actually having this thing. Right? And then, like, guys saying, like, I'm planning my great escape. Thank you for having the bus program. I've been helping Vince get signatures. Everybody that has signed the forms every round has personally, usually, you know, when you go around to these things and you're, if you're running for SA or whatever, people might begrudgingly sign it. Now, not only do they sign it, they rip it out of my hand and then thank me later. I mean, it's a hugely popular program, and I think it is, thank you, Ben.
Representative Romney.
Yeah, good job, man. But in regards to the 1,500 signatures, how do we keep track if, like, a person doesn't sign, like, the same thing twice?
Well, we just have to, I mean, they shouldn't duplicate. Just make that aware that in the process.
No, okay. I mean with, like, if I have one and he signs it for you to. Like,
he can't duplicate.
I think if you just tell them not to sign it twice, that should work. Is there any other questions or comments? Okay. Any other announcements or reports?
Right.
Really quick, sorry. Just again, if for the new representatives in the
SA. Oh, sorry.
If you haven't signed up for your little meeting with me.
Sorry about that.
Tuesday, Wednesday, Tuesday. Has anyone signed up? It's great. Are you laughing at me? Thank you.
Oh, I've got one more. I think it's worth noting that our representative who won the trustee election
Okay. Are there any other announcements or reports? All right. Owen? Really? Okay.
Can we thank Ari too for all his hard work?
Yeah.
Any other announcements or reports? Okay. On to business of the day. First, we have an SAFC update with co-chair Miller Little, soon to be former co-chair.
Why are you leaving us? You going abroad?
Yeah.
We'll let him give his presentation.
Okay, guys. So this is the changes we make every semester in the PNC handbook, and a lot of them will be very familiar to you guys because they came up during the field, because it's made some of our changes. So they're in your packet, I believe. I'm not sure which page it is, but it says major changes at the top. Do you want me to read through all of them, or do you guys want to raise any questions you have?
I was
Could you go through them quickly?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know what did you send it out?
Yeah, well, I didn't send it out to the listserv. I just sent it to Ari to include in the agenda.
Okay, so to start with, we're saying that at least one undergraduate must be present to represent their group at the budget hearing, and only undergraduates and their advisor may attend the budget hearing. We've had some issues in the past with community members who are in no way affiliated with groups trying to represent the groups at the table. Just want to make sure the undergraduate's money stays in the hands of the undergraduates or their group advisor. For price codes and documentation, I'm sure you guys all recall we have a lot of issues. There's the signatures, what is a signature, what is not a signature, so, and also emails, what counts as an attachment and what's not an attachment. We said that if your price goes in the form of an attachment of an email, so you must print out the print screen of the email as well as the attachment. And that's just, I mean, obviously you can still edit it, but it's still just that we want to make sure it's a direct email from the actual vendor. And in front of all uses of the word sign, we put hand sign in front of it so that electronically signed is no longer valid. And we also added a separate statement saying that electronic signatures are not considered a valid form of documentation. Now, under Category 2, we added that speakers and performers may not receive more than one honorarium per visit to Cornell. We had some issues in the past of groups that would do their own group event on one day, then do a cohort on the next day. So essentially, they were just double dipping and getting twice the amount of funding for their one project or event. So we just wanted to make sure that speakers are limited to one honorarium per visit to Cornell. If the other group wants to bring them back, and they can bring them back on their own and pay their own honorarium. Category 3, durable goods. We said, as if you guys remember the art club that we did not fund front of the PNC handbook, we had a clause saying the club that specializes in visual arts may apply for art supplies such as paint and canvas. We're not limiting it to paint and canvas, but that's the guidelines for what they can apply for. We also included DVDs under the category that we how we treat all books and magazines, because in the recent years we've had DVDs instead of other forms of media. And coordinated events, we added that semester budgets and coordinated budgets may not overlap funding for events. We've had some cases where a group will apply for a cohort budget and then their own individual group budget, but also apply for funding for the same event, which we do not allow. Under the appeal guidelines, we say that all supporting information pertinent to the appeal must be turned in when appeal applications are due and may not be turned in at the table. We have two groups this year that try to turn in this form document at the table, and we don't accept any documentation at the table during the appeals, so we thought we'd make that a little bit more clear in the CMP handbook. And then the big one, we had groups with issues about percentages and what's greater than or less than a percentage. So we said that any group that has less than 60.00% at the time that budgets are due may not receive FASB funding. This is designed to keep the money of undergraduates in the hands of the undergraduates. We're giving, it's an undergraduate organization, all the groups are undergraduate groups. We don't want you to have 75% graduate students taking undergraduate money. We don't think it's fair to the undergraduates who pay this and the undergraduates who enjoy it. There are also three parts that are not listed on the version that's in your handout. The first is that the president and treasurer of groups must be undergraduate. It's not stated explicitly anywhere. We just want to make sure that that's what's happening. Second is that price codes and foreign languages must be translated. friends of the league could not read at all, so it's here to be helpful. Also, we are only funding for travel within continental North America. We don't think it's right to fund groups to go, I mean, to go to Europe, basically. There's a lot of groups who apply to use students' money, the financial fee to fly to Europe or go to Europe, and we don't think that that's fair. So we say that only fund for travel within continental North America. Those are the changes. Do you guys have any questions about those? Yes.
Oh, hold on. I have a speaker list. Vice President Boxer.
Sam, first of all, we're sad that you're leaving. I'm sure that Maddie will do a great job in your place, but it was a great, you did a great job this semester. My question was actually in relation to the change that you guys made this year with capping groups at 3,000, right? Was it? Okay, so groups that would normally apply for like, you know, $30,000 or $40,000 budgets in theory were capped. So I was just wondering sort of what the feedback was from that, and sort of like how many groups do you have any idea were affected by that? I mean, I know of a couple.
I'm sure a lot of groups were affected by that. But the rationale for that was a lot of the state big ticket groups that, I mean, you look at Malarso, you look at the Fashion Design League, they're putting on $70,000, $80,000, $90,000 shows. So for them going from, I think last year they got 7,000, or last semester they got 7,000, went to 3,000 this semester, it wasn't that big of a cost for them because the vast majority of the revenue comes from ticket sales. Furthermore, the groups of that magnitude we met with personally outside after budget deals, trying to help them come up with other sources of funding. We gave them contacts for the Dean of Students and the Bartels Fund, a lot of other different little funding things on campus. So we're just starting to make that money up. And we actually were quite pleased with the way it worked out because we didn't hear any outright complaints except for, I think, one group. And it allowed us to secure more money for special projects at the end of the semester. Because it guaranteed us that in a field, we would not be losing, you know, $8,000 to $10,000 at a time. So we could give more money straightforward to directly to the group. Whereas last year, they had to set aside a lot more money for fields, because if you lose all your fields at $9,000 in field, giving out a lot more money. So for us, I think it worked out quite well. Who knows what will be next semester? It could change either way. But
Representative Lavin?
I think it was great that you responded to all the issues that came up. It certainly makes it clear when the appeals come through or if they don't. But at the same time, I'm just thinking from looking at the changes, you also want to, I mean, I'm sure the SSC does this, but just from my perspective, for example, the first one, I don't know if the SSC is necessarily thinking also about, you know, when the group is applying for funding. I know it's easy, it's much easier to say electronic signatures aren't acceptable and everything has to be hand signed. But I'm just thinking of like a lot of organizations when they send emails and whatnot, electronic signatures are, I mean, that's what they use and they're valid.
These aren't emails we're referring to. These are faxes, the letters we're talking about. Emails, I mean, obviously can't hand sign them.
I know, but like letters, for example. I mean, people rarely use postal mail for letters anymore. It's via email with their electronic signature that they have, you know, in their
whatever. Right, yeah, we covered that with the, where it says if your price goes an attachment of the email, you must not submit the original email as well as the attachment.
Okay, so, but then when it says electronic signatures are not considered a valid form of documentation, it just has to be printed, then it's valid?
We'll have to have the original email.
Okay. So then, I don't know if that, does that contradict then?
I think it might. You're saying you email a letter?
Right. I'm just thinking like what's efficient for the group when they have, you know, it might be hard for the group to get a letter from an organization if how they operate is, you know, via email which they're just on the bottom. But right. As long as if they can submit to a printout of it.
Right, with the original email, yeah.
I think Ryan's wondering about people who are off campus. Signatures of people who are off campus who are not in the group. Like, is that what you're wondering?
No, I mean, I'm referring to, like, private vendors that they're using as
Yeah, that's
what I'm talking about. Oh, they're talking
about
students.
No, I mean, people who aren't, in Cornell. Yeah.
Sam, I thought the electronic signature issue was an actual typed signature.
Well,
or was it?
What's the big issue is, I don't know if you guys remember the Bridget community, right?
Yeah.
That was, they sent in a Word document, it was clearly a Word document, but it had no signature. We like the signature, the handwritten signature, as a way to verify that. So, our rationale here is that you can either get faxed in or you can have your direct email. And that is just, because, I mean, as much as you like to try and like put as much trust in students as possible, it's hard to always accept Word documents as absolute proof. Because you or I or anybody can create a Word document. So this is just trying to give us an extra measure of making sure that it actually is legit.
Okay. Vice President Slickman.
I noticed you added the two decimal spaces after the 60.00. It's good, yeah. Have we defined what an undergraduate member of the group is yet, though? Because is it someone who's on the listserv, or is it someone who's attending meetings? I mean, I remember we had a couple of debates on that earlier in the semester about what a member actually was.
Right. No, that's a good point. We should add that in. Qualify what a member is.
And the other thing was that, and back to what this debate was earlier, I understand your concern with accepting Word documents, but wouldn't it be just as easy to forge a signature? Just the legitimacy of a forged signature, I think, would tie in the same lines as, you know, someone typing in a name. So I think we should look at accepting electronic signatures in that same regard. I think those should be equally as acceptable because, you know, we can verify whether or not that's legitimate and verify whether or not the handwritten signature.
I think the issue is where you draw the line.
Absolutely, yeah.
I think a lot of people, I think they're forging a hand signature much worse than just typing out a name.
Same principle, though.
Oh, it's exactly the same principle, yeah. But I think, I don't know, that's where you draw the line.
Sure.
We chose it here. You can easily argue other places as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Hartman.
TJ jumped the gun. I was going to mention the undergraduate member, too. Mm-hmm. I was going to say maybe we could have like a list of members' names when they apply, and then they have to, so when they fill out the electronic form, just like just slot.
Well, when they're registered, they have to register at the Student Activities Office, the SAO. So one option would be that they declare the membership there, and the membership on that form must like match up with what they put in the budget. That would be, I think that's the option we're aiming for.
Yeah.
Because it's hard to go through and measure listeners, measure, like, go to every meeting and measure people, so.
I think we need to increase the decimals to 3.
I don't know.
Well, you'd have to have. Well, never mind. Representative Rami.
Yeah. What was your reasoning for like saying, you know, how it's not fair to take like groups abroad or something? Because I was just wondering. I don't know how often you get these requests, but what if there was like some sort of international competition?
They're very rare. In the past, what we've had, we haven't actually had any conferences. We've had an acapella group wanting to go and tour England or tour like Spain or
Italy, right.
And so. I mean, we don't think it's fair to fund undergraduate travel all the way over to Europe and Italy just for their acapella experience.
But in terms of, like, this competition?
I mean, I guess we evaluate that on a case-by-case basis, but the time being, it hasn't been an issue in the past, so once we're into it, then we'll deal with them. Could easily come back to the FA appeals or who knows where.
Well, I'm sorry. Ask Gary.
I just had a question from the report Ryan Grace was saying, which was, I guess because we don't have the social security number, right? You don't have the KPC number in front of us, but I think that's what I understand what you're saying, if they have non-medical documentation,
yeah,
it would be acceptable, but I guess the last part where it's just added electronic information is not considered about all the documentation. I guess I'm just not sure where in the handbook that is relative to the rest of it, so I'm not sure.
Okay, I think what we'll do is we'll change that last statement to in Word documents, so that will fix that.
Yeah.
If there's a subject, it's called graduate for documentation. In the handbook, except for all the
Oh, yeah, no, I didn't know if, like, the electronic signatures part, like, the first two before that were kind of like, that had to be sort of like.
No.
So, yeah, so that would be. And I was going to say, because things coming up in the fall, speak to your anyone else, if you wanted to make a change, you can change that box here, defining what undergraduate members were right now, if you were to do that.
Ari Epstein.
Rounding. I mean, maybe like something about no rounding up or no, you know, cut off
the number at 60%. I mean, just because it's the same exact thing that will happen, but there will be
so
more
issues.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Could add another zero. And
well, no, but if you have, like, you like,
a disclaimer to that, if your thing comes in at 59.67%, that it's not, that the computer is not going to round it up for you, which is what the groups that we heard had to
say. So we can just add in,
the first speaker's list is now empty. Does anyone else wish to speak for the first time? Vice President Strickland.
I'd like to take up NASDAQ's offer and define what an undergraduate member is. And maybe, you know, we can discuss this, but I think, I mean, the essay defines a member as someone who comes, but if they miss three meetings that, or three in a row, I think they're off. And I think it'd be appropriate if we define a member of our SASC organization as a member who comes to events, but if they miss three in a row or...
How about if they attend three meetings per semester?
Yeah, you have to attend three meetings, and then that would put the ball in the courts of the organization, but they would have to take attendance,
right.
And that way we would have a little bit more of a legitimate record keeping of
the
how many people are.
Issue with that is I know a lot of organizations that don't meet regularly; they will have maybe 2 weeks per semester.
Well, so about a percentage. What, you know, you have to percent. You know, if you have two meetings and 50%. I mean, do we have any groups that just meet like once a semester? Or okay, and
yes,
then also,
yes.
I mean,
bridges to Nicaragua or whatever.
But still, I mean, you would have individuals who'd be fundraising and doing other events like that. Maybe not a necessarily organized meeting, but Hey, what do you think? How do you
think
we should define an undergraduate member?
The option that looks the best is when students register at the SAO, they declare their membership. And I don't know if it would be the SAO's job or our job to say what actually is a member, what is not a member. So I think I would be comfortable saying that we take the membership, or they must take their membership from the SAO at the creation, and then put that in their budget.
But, I mean, how many people sign up with the SAO? I mean, I'm a member of... turn left, and but I'm obviously not, but so
yeah.
It's just like I think
what
it's supposed to be.
I mean, we can't go and police every group and every member.
Why not, though? We're dealing with $1.5 million.
Doesn't
it should be.
Time, well, 10 seconds.
What, I mean, logistically, I mean, 350 groups.
Speaker's time
is
expired. There's an administrative burden there that's really prohibitive. Is what I think Sam is trying to say.
2 minute extension because I love his outfit.
He doesn't have anything else to say.
Representative Lavin. Representative Lavin.
I agree with what you're saying. I don't think we can actually decide right now. We're gonna put this responsibility on SAFC now. That's gonna open up so much. They can't possibly monitor attendance now as well. I mean, I couldn't imagine. You know better than we do. I mean, you know the process. So I mean, I think what you were saying. Using the student activities office, or I just don't think it should be the SAFC's responsibility to do that. I don't think they can elect the
position.
Wait,
money.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No, I meant I got you.
Oh,
on the list. Representative Rami.
Here. I agree with Rami Lavin's comment, and I think that the SAFC shouldn't monitor it, but if we were to specify what a member is by attending like three meetings in a row or something like that, we should have someone to monitor it, 'cause what's to stop someone from just saying, oh, he's a member, and like he'll have nobody to like dispute him about it, so some form of monitoring.
Sam, in your opinion, of all the groups that say they're 60% undergraduates, do you think every single one of them is actually 60% undergrad?
I honestly have no idea. There's a monthly percentage group. For the most part, we deal with three people at a time. But I would say,
I'm going to say from my experience in the office, we've seen a lot of groups that seem to have precisely 50% undergraduate membership.
That's very convenient.
Very convenient.
So my point is really, if we raise the standards, do we really believe it's going to be a solution to the problem? Representative Buters?
I would think
fine.
Go ahead.
if another option, I guess, could be if there's a group which has exactly 60%, or say sort of like a warning zone, if that's a group has between 60 and 65% undergrads, to actually have someone check that group. You know, if that's only a handful of groups or something like that.
Good to get turning to, like, how cynical are we?
Yeah.
Like, at what point do we take the report? I think we have to start qualifying, like, you're within 2.5% that we investigate you. I
think we just make it 2.5% higher.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, moving an arbitrary standard, I don't know what would be the best way to deal with getting around actually making sure a group representative kind of accurate.
Representative Hartman?
Kind of what DJ was saying, maybe we just have to get all the groups to kind of have a group like petition, and they have to get their members, sign a form, and then we'll know exactly who's part of that group. So, but then we won't know for gratitude, so how much percentage wise to make up the group, but at least we'll know like how large their group is, and we'll know if DJ is actually a part of the term line or not.
I am.
Representative Self.
Well, I just want to say, when we spoke to the administrative burden that checking attendance would pose for the FX team, they already have to check hundreds and hundreds of budgets. And I think that the fact that, you already have to carefully follow other guidelines for a funding application is fair enough to leave attendance on the under, because I don't want to get FX team having to verify email, or simply just groups having to scramble to find all their memberships, proves that they have, even especially if it's a large group, leaving a semester, that you get some petition every time they want to apply to verify their membership. So I think the current system is fine in that regard.
Representative A. Salem.
I think that I agree with everyone. I don't think the administrative burden can be met. And I think that the changes are fine so long as the electronic signature thing is going to be changed. So I motion to approve the changes.
Okay, please. A motion to approve the changes and a second. Is there any dissent? All right.
Dissent.
Going?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sorry. We'll vote on it. I'll be the only one.
All right. And unless there's any, if there's no objection, we're going to conduct a hand vote. All in favor of approve? Actually. Oh no, we're doing it all together.
Okay.
Did you have anything else you want to say
about these? Members, like, read off.
Oh right. Oh well. Oh, I'm sorry. We're doing that part separately. I thought you meant like each.
Oh good.
I only did that so you would draw. Okay. All right. So is there any dissent? All right. So the changes are approved. So would you please read off the members?
Okay. So I guess 2 weeks ago we had our interviews with Ilan and Adam Gay at FF Cicero, and our new members will be R.P. Frihada, Taylor Mulheron, Maddie Ehrlich, Wheeling Yu, Isa Rufo, Benjamin Schreff, Lauren Nicola, Celeste Chung, Chris Hilbert, Daniel Fernandez, David Chu, and Thomas Murray. So there are 12 new members, and Maddie Ehrlich will be the new co-chair elected on Monday.
Go Maddie.
Other questions?
Call for acclamation.
There's been a call for acclamation in a second. Is there any dissent? Okay, seeing none, the new members and the new co-chair are approved.
Thank you guys very much.
Hey Sam, where are you going?
I'm deciding between London School of Economics and Trinity College.
All right, well, have fun wherever you go. All right. Okay, moving on. Next we're going to do Resolution 44, Resolution regarding the SA Annual Report. You have a copy of this resolution and the essay report in your packets.
44.
Yeah, 44. I'm going to run through very quickly through this report. Oh. I'm going to sit. Mark is chairing the meeting, but I'm going to sit here to present this. I'm going to run through this very quickly. Basically, I really feel like, as an assembly, we have a lot to be proud about this year. This is just an outline of what we did. So I'm going to run through this very quickly just to refresh your memories in case you don't remember what we did. We started off with a bang, making homecoming free for all undergraduates. Of course, this was important because this was the first year that undergrads were required to pay or at least the first year the class of 2007 was experiencing those fees for sporting events. Next, we already spoke about the pilot spring break transportation program, which hopefully will be expanded next year. And then we continue to improve on the collegiate leadership program. Vice President Boxer isn't here right now, but that was something that she worked on this year. Students helping students, we voted to expand and solicit funds from other sources. Then there were several actions in conjunction with other groups that were really important. Their reallocation of trustee seats so that there was one undergraduate and one graduate seat designated. And for the first time since 2004, we have an undergraduate elect trustee. So that's great. Review of the Krauss Report in conjunction with the UA. Of course, the code of conduct changes have been super controversial with the undergraduates, and we'll continue, or you guys, or next year's assembly will continue to examine that. Campus sustainability, that's of course been a hot topic these past few weeks. That's mentioned again a little bit later. Forums with President Scorton, that was extremely important too, just in corresponding with students. It's really the first time we've had a president this active and speaking to students. I think the only forum that Rawlings held was in response to the campus stabbing. Lehman, well, I won't get into all that. Big Red Review, we of course, we endorsed that website. Textbooks and ISBN numbers, Representative Duke and Representative Gay worked on that in their role as the UA representative. Of course, the UA has their purview to examine the policies of the Cornell store. And happily, I think next year they'll be publishing the ISBN numbers. Of course, that's important when people try to go to other sources to get the books at a cheaper price. They need those ISBN numbers. Committees, Committee on Dining Services, one of our most active committees. Some of their accomplishments are outlined there. Mark, if you wanted to add anything, just send it to me. Res Life Committee, some of your stuff is outlined there. I didn't have access to any of your minutes, so if I left stuff out, then just send it to me. JFARC, Outline and Students Helping Students. SAFC, very, very brief little thing there. Environmental Committee, of course, Sustainability. Transportation, Vince's Transportation Committee, already talked about. The Charter Review Committee by Mr. Mazdak Asgary. List of recommendations, I guess I'll see those soon. Yeah, all right. What? All right, we'll talk about it. Elections, of course, we're all aware of the policy changes, the abolishment of tickets. That was huge. I'll move on from that. The referenda were hugely important this year. We had one, of course, on legal music service, one on renewable energy fee, and one on a college town community center. And important topics of discussion and future issues. Byline funding year, you guys should know all about that already. Basically, you'll be allocating millions of dollars to many, many groups. Sustainable future for Cornell. Actually, Neil and I were just talking about this a couple of weeks ago. I told you guys that the administration is looking for a temporary solution, a temporary fee that they can implement, and not this coming fall semester, but the next one, fall 08. They'd like to start the opt-out bursar, or they're looking for a long-term solution, possibly a bursar charged opt-out renewable energy fee, right?
Opt-in, actually.
Opt-in? Oh, okay. And, of course, the President's Climate Commitment Steering Committee, that's Austin Redman was elected to that committee. He'll be serving for the next year, so that is hugely important. That committee will be, I guess, organizing the institutional structures that are going to steer us towards this goal of climate neutrality. Legal Music Service, next year's assembly, needs to look at whether or not it's worth it to spend money on it. 54% of students thought yes. Transportation to and from Cornell, of course, Vince is trying to expand that program. It has proven to be self-sustainable, which is a great thing, but you guys have to examine whether, I guess, how big is too big, when do you infringe on local business, code of conduct, huge topic next year, and, of course, Trustee Malier's student list. We voted to endorse that, and it may or may not be established next year. So if you write this, don't really read for grammar. I was half asleep when I wrote this, all 7 hours when I wrote this. But if you have any additions, send them to me right away. Or actually, I mean, we're discussing it right now, so just tell me now if there was Representative Budish.
I think Ivy Council.
Oh, good point.
And also the proposal to extend youth and cleaning hours and risen salts. That was an initiative last year that we did, but due to staff appreciation event and increased dialogue with
Could you actually email those to me?
Yeah.
That was a lie.
I was planning. Here, I'll just give you money.
Okay. Other questions or comments? This is a pretty important report, I guess. Oh, and then the accompanying resolution. I'm sorry. Forgot about that.
Yeah. Which, I actually should have put this on business of the day, obviously, for reasons of timeliness.
All right, so before this can be presented to President Scorton and the rest of the Cornell community, it has to be approved by a majority vote of the Student Assembly. Basically, all this resolution is saying is we're going to send it to several members of the administration. We approve this report. And then it outlines a couple ways that we can really get the word out about the report, let the Cornell community know that they can come read this and, you know, see what we've been up to. There have been a lot of questions, I guess. I guess students have been saying we need to more effectively communicate our accomplishments, et cetera, et cetera. So this report serves to do that. Questions, comments?
You wrote this one?
You give it to the president and you forward it to
the students. Well, technically, this annual report is written and presented to, verbatim in the charter, it says the president of the university and the Cornell student body. So, but all members of the Cornell community have access to it. So it's written with that audience in mind as well. All right. Questions, comments, speakers? Actually, I'm not sure in the meeting.
Are we doing that right now?
Mm-hmm.
Of the draft?
No, resolution
42. Yeah, of this.
Oh.
Is that still stand?
Yeah.
Okay. It's been a call for acclamation. It's been second. Is there any dissent? All right, resolution 44.
did you really read it?
Yeah, I looked it up.
Oh, really? Oh, you looked it over?
I just saw
it. All right. No, I'm just kidding. Okay, on to unfinished business. Resolution 31, we're going to skip. Resolution 42, resolution regarding the... I can't remember what that... The Intellectual Diversity Initiative. Vice President Coombs, Representative Dina, Mr. Goose, Representative Hartman, and et al. It'd be helpful if you guys kind of congregate over in that area so we have our attention focused in one section of the room. I know you're right.
Can I just put the second one up?
Yes. All right, let's get started. 10 minutes.
Okay. I guess this is just a resolution supporting the Intellectual Diversity Initiative. It's a statement written that we need the Student Assembly to support. because of the tenants stated there. There were some concerns last week which were very important, one of which was the bias, the seeming, or the might seem like political bias in the resolution. If you look at the list of signatories, we have Shelley Leverly has added her name on there. She's the former president of Amnesty International, as well as Mark Zulnowski, who is the president of Outreach. So we have sort of alleviated this whole bias. We changed number two from last week to add the word students. So it says to the exclusion of students' viewpoints. So it's clear that teachers aren't necessarily required to present every single viewpoint on the topic, but rather they're just required, what we would like them to do is not to exclude or shoot down students' viewpoints. And because of that change, one of the first people who were vocal about it against that resolution last week has also signed on, Mr. Vince Hartman. I think that the list of signatories shows a broad support within the student assembly. I think that it shows that it's not a political thing, it's not an ideological thing. It's a matter of principle of intellectual diversity. I urge all of you guys to vote for it because it's really something we should tap. And I will be open to more questions and sort of dialogue. I've talked to a lot of you guys about it, and this was the best thing we sort of came to a conclusion to. So if you have any questions for me or for any of the people sitting at the here, I'm sure everyone will be happy to answer.
I don't want to belabor anything.
You have 8 minutes.
And I will be unusually brief. I don't want to belabor anything that you said. I would just say that if there is anybody who has true concerns on this, and there's a possibility of maybe amending it, we would ask you to bring those forward. We don't want to see people vote no. Just if there's any way that we can bring that together, because I know CJ and I had that resolution recently. That it looked like we actually probably could fix some of that stuff before it ended up dying. A lot of work goes into this. If anybody has any concerns that they think we can address here today, obviously this is the last chance to do so. And a lot of people have put a lot of time into this, as evidenced by the sheer number of students raised. So that's all I would ask.
Before we move on to the speakers list, I have to say that Vice President Slicklin is withdrawing his name from the resolution. He's not in the room. Oh, there he is. All right. Representative Gay.
One of my strongest concerns about the resolution is that, in fact, it provides no recourse to people who actually feel that they've been victims of some bias or incident based on their political ideology. There are many mechanisms in place right now. There's the bias response program, the department chairs, the deans of different colleges, and ultimately different administration officials, where you can go and you can discuss it. And I understand your concern that we don't just vote against it for the sake of voting against it, but that we provide you some alternatives. But there is no alternative we can propose today which would affirmatively say, yes, this is the steps to be taken if somebody feels that they're victims of this. And also, I mean, we support freedom of thought, we support freedom of choice. Every intellectual should support that. Obviously, we could also pass a resolution to say we support freedom of religion. Yeah. However, that's not our role. We've discussed the role of the student assembly many times over the last couple of years, and we've decided that we're not going to pass resolutions just for the sake of passing resolutions saying we support this ideal. And so this doesn't actually enumerate any kind of suggestion about how you're going to solve this problem. And this is a really small issue. I mean, I would argue that it may not actually represent the full breadth of campus politics. You said you have a couple token signatures from one of the former presidents of the International and the outgoing president of SciFax, but there's no representation from the progressive groups on campus, which is one of the largest people. So I would just say, I support everything. Obviously, much of that's a good thing, but until we can actually get some solid recourse for these people who have this consent, because that's legitimate. I still support that. I think it would be premature for us to say, you know what, we can do this before we actually propose some mechanism for actually doing that. And I'll do my time to the next speaker.
Okay. representative selves?
Well, I mean, I guess I have, I share a lot of representative concerns. Personally, I feel as though this is not a problem at Cornell, and I think that passing a resolution like this is affirming that some sort of problem like that exists. I am sensitive to things that Ms. Sweeney mentioned last week as having personal experience with other students feeling that they had difficulties with their professors. But, you know, if that's the case, again, this resolution does nothing to actually address that. It provides no mechanism for students to seek redress against their professors, to provide, it doesn't work within the existing mechanisms here at Cornell, and it's just a statement that I believe is politicized. I'm offended by the way that it's conflated the term diversity with the Open Doors, Open Hearts, Open Minds initiative. I think that speaks to open minds as being opposed to bias-related incidents that are related to oppression against people of color, women, sexual minorities, things like that. I don't think intellectual diversity is a part of the mission of that statement. And again, I think this is a political statement. In my time in the Assembly, I've seen the Academic Bill of Rights presented here in its original form three times. I've seen its modified versions as regional colleges have passed them, and this is just another version of that. This is the Academic Bill of Rights with different text called the Intellectual Diversity Initiative with buzzwords that is supposedly more appealing. I think it's making a statement about something that is not a problem at Cornell, and I would encourage that this is an empty resolution that is a political statement that does bias a conservative perspective. I'm not convinced at all by this list of token signatories. I encourage us to vote this down.
Community member Austin Redmond.
Yes, I guess I'm just going to echo what Sergeant said. Last week I asked the group there's a mechanism for students to bring complaints about being prejudiced or discriminated against in terms of grades and results. I don't know. And so I did a little research and I found out the bias response program exists for just this purpose, as Person Gilly just said. And so once again, I look at this document and I see this as a statement that we support free speech, which is great. I would hope that everybody does that. It doesn't substantively do anything, in my opinion. And I was just wondering what from the group that's represented here, is there like a certain grievance that we have with the bias response program being ineffective, or something more, you could turn this resolution into being something that doesn't.
I think it's what we said when Megan said this last week is that the bias response protocol isn't designed to take on these types of problems. As Calvin said, it was designed to take on different problems, and the bias response protocol also. There's a problem of if a professor's approached about it, there's no recourse. Like the bias response protocol is just an educational program. The student has actually no recourse. Like it's like saying like, let's talk about why you saying this word, this offensive word is bad, and that's all they do. But our resolution, it's not empty. It is saying that we desire a mechanism. We, Student Assembly, cannot create that mechanism. It has to be the administration. But for the administration to create that mechanism, the administration has to listen to us saying, we believe this is important. We believe these issues are relevant. It's not just saying we support free speech. I love the First Amendment. Like, that's not what the resolution is saying. This is saying these issues of intellectual diversity are important to us as the Cornell community. And if this resolution passes, the Student Assembly is behind that statement, and we can take it further from there. But there is no...
Speaker's time has expired. Vice President Greenberg.
Often, he contacted me earlier this week. We discussed making some kind of a coherent action plan, like something that would be, you would be accountable for some way of actually articulating how you're going to go about, addressing the issue of free speech on campus and intellectual diversity on campus. I don't see this resolution having changed at all from last week. I'm curious what your response to that is and what that mechanism is actually going to be and how it's going to come from this resolution.
Sure. I talked to you, and afterwards I talked to Vice President of Internal Operations for next year, Ryan Lavin. And it was decided, or sort of what the argument that made most sense to me is that the creation of this complex ad hoc committee is going to be more bureaucracy. The better way to handle this is passing the resolution, then creating, in conjunction with the Vice President of Internal Operations
sort of a liaisonship or person who's appointed to follow through with this resolution. As I said last week, and I stand by this, I would be willing to run for that position or willing to be appointed to that position and sort of, with the help of the student assembly, sort of formulate it. But I don't think it should be this formal, complex committee, because just like, you know, there are a lot of committees we have created in the student assembly that don't do much. They don't meet. They're required to have like 7 faculty members, 8 grad students, like, and that doesn't happen. But if you create sort of this informal setting where someone is passionate about this topic, like myself, and I'm sure other people are, and we sort of can collaborate with the people I ask and form something next year, I think that, I think Ryan can speak to this, that seems to be the best thing we can come up with, because we felt that any other thing, like a bureaucratic committee, might be hindering to the actual spirit of the resolution.
Okay, but if forming that committee is ultimately going to be your goal for next year, or forming that liaisonship is going to be your goal for next year, why not just create it in this resolution now so that you can avoid that process next year when we're busier with byline funding?
That simply happened because there was no particular, like, there was no particular wording that we could agree to on. And I asked you and I asked other people, there was nothing suggested to me. I mean, if you have a wording for me right now, we'll interchange the amendment. And two, we felt like the resolution as a statement should pass now because, you know, it's been signed by people in the assembly now who will not be here next year. Yeah. But carrying on the assembly's action on next year's assembly is next year's assembly's duty. So, and I, as I said, I would be willing to put my name down as someone who would be the liaison for this resolution. But to be honest, the main problem is there was no wording suggested.
Speaker's time has expired. Vice President Flickman.
I first want to apologize to the co-signers for not telling you beforehand that I was going to draw my name. I think it's no surprise that I'm a conservative and I have conservative views, and I completely agree with most of the things that the Intellectual Diversity Initiative says. My concerns for withdrawing my name were that it's just, we've had the debate before, what is the purview of the SA? And if you read the charge in our charter, we're responsible for the Dean of Students Office and the campus life. And I'm very concerned that we didn't contact any members of the faculty senate. Why didn't Charlie Walcott? I mean, have you contacted Charlie Walcott to talk to him about what he thinks about this? And frankly, I think, you know, it's a great idea, and I'm probably going to vote yes. I think free speech on campus is extremely important. It's important for students to express their intellectual diversity by being free to say whatever they want. And I think in the same regard, it's acceptable for professors to do the same. I'm sure that a lot of us have been in situations where we've been in class, regardless of whether or not we're a Democrat or Republican, that the teacher has said something or the professor has said something that we don't necessarily agree with. And that's okay, because I think it's important for us to realize the difference of opinion that are on this campus, and it makes us more diversified and varied and frankly more intelligent individuals that we're exposed to these opinions. So with that, I do agree with what you're saying. I think it's important. But I'm just concerned with the way that it's going to be executed. I'm concerned with the way that the faculty hasn't been contacted. I'd really like, if this is voted down, I would like to bring it back next year and discuss it with the Dean of the Faculty and other members of the Faculty Senate or University Assembly liaisons. And see what their opinions are, because I think it's one thing that as student leaders were consulted, but that's just one side of the coin. Our standing rules say that we have to consult everyone that a resolution involves and affects. And we haven't contacted any members of the faculty. We haven't contacted any staff or anything. And I think that's the other side of the coin. I think we really need to contact those individuals, see what their thoughts are, and then I think this resolution would carry a lot more merit if certain professors or individuals were supported.
Representative A. Salem?
Okay, so I'm going to respond to a few things.
Yeah.
CJ, you bring up an interesting point, which is the contact with faculty. And I have been in contact with different faculty. I have not been in contact with the faculty senate, the head of the faculty senate. However, I have been in contact with different members of faculty, Mark, especially the government department, because, I mean, that's where my department is. And I did not bring their signatures or bring their support here because I felt like we're the student assembly. We are accountable to the students as the undergraduate representative. And to us, this is what should matter, the opinion of the students. And just to respond to a couple things, I don't know if calling something token signatures, I don't know if that was supposed to disrespect the people who signed it, but
to my understanding, these people put a lot of thought into it. I brought this to the people's attention. They looked at it over and over again. They grilled me on it, and then they decided to sign it. So I mean, these people. I don't know if people meant to disrespect the signatories by calling them token signatures, because I don't think they're token signatures. I think they're people who took a stand because they believed in this initiative, and I don't think you should disregard it, you know, just by calling it a token signature. So I understand people keep saying the mechanism. There's no mechanism. There are two things people have to, that I would like to bring to your attention. Student Assembly will produce statements. This statement will have a mechanism, as I explained to Elon, in the sense of it's an informal mechanism. I'm a passionate person about this resolution. I am pledging to you guys, and we have to operate on the honor system, that I will take this resolution forward once it's passed. But I need the support of the Student Assembly to take this resolution forward. We have talked to different members of the Student Assembly, and different members told me the creation of a bureaucratic ad hoc committee won't be the best way to approach this. That's why I did not add the committee stuff in there, because there was no particular wording that someone came up with that was appropriate. So I really urge you guys to vote yes. This is important. This is a really important issue. It's not a political issue. I hate people trying to make it a political issue. It's a simple support of intellectual diversity of these tenants, and it's a support for the Student Assembly. And that's all we need so we can move forward in the future.
Because time has expired, Vice President Coombs.
Just to answer a couple of these points. When the Academic Bill of Rights came up earlier this year with CJ and I was not supportive of it. The reason I was not supportive of it is precisely because I felt that there was a party, there was a partisan association with it, and it's sort of the party, but someone thought it's David Horowitz saying whatever. I would have supported something brought up by, if there was Michael Moore running around the country sometimes, maybe saying he's going to get passed there. I wouldn't do that either, because they can claim that as some kind of a victory and whatever. But what I said at that time is that I supported the ideals inherent to it, because as long as no one group of people can claim it as a victory, this what we brought forward really lays it on the line of whether you support the ideals, because this does not support David Horowitz. He can't claim data. This is entirely separate from it. This embodies some of the same ideals, but a lot of times when you bring up academic global rights, people will say, well, I support the ideals. I don't like the idea of supporting Mr. Horowitz. This gives people an opportunity to do that. This intellectual diversity is an issue that has been mentioned multiple times by some of my colleagues at The Sun and different editorials and op-ed pieces. It's been mentioned multiple times to me personally as a representative. I'm going to echo a lot of what Achman said earlier, in that one of the reasons I brought this forward is because I feel it's an important issue to students. This is one of the times when I'm listening to what they're telling me, and then working together with these individuals to bring this forward. Whether the faculty supports it, I've talked to my own advisor, Isaac Kramnick. He seems to like the idea. But that's not really important to me. What's important to me is, does the undergraduate student body support this? Has there been a lot of talk about it? Yes, everywhere. And it's on to me personally. This would show them. This is largely symbolic, but it shows those people that the SA is behind them, that we listen to student concerns, that we're concerned with outreach, and that we are doing this for the students. I know that a lot of this opposition, I'm just going to call it the white elephant. A lot of it is people want to be labeled right wing, left wing, whatever.
Motion to extend 2 minutes.
Sorry, Kevin.
Okay, the motion to extend for 2 minutes, and the second is there any dissent? All right.
I appreciate the gesture. I'll actually try to go briefer. I think there's a lot of opposition to being labeled politically one way or the other. I would encourage people to rise above that. If there's any legacy I want to leave the university, it's telling people to don't focus so much on that. If there's something that you know is right and is good, you're looking at that thing, the question shouldn't be, well, is that commonly regarded as liberal? Or is that commonly regarded as conservative? No. It should be just, do you think that's a good ideal? Is that something that's good that you should support? That's all we're asking. We're asking, look at the actual ideals in this resolution.
ignore any of these associations. That's particularly why we didn't call it the Academic Bill of Rights, because I don't want to get Horowitz credit for this. We're not doing that. This is something that we, as a student assembly, are saying we support these ideals, regardless of the associations, because we believe in responding as a student body and doing it in the best.
Vice President Boxer.
Just really briefly, I don't want to belabor this. I guess, you know, Ahmed, you touched on the bias-related protocol that was brought up before, and how this, you know, how that's not designed for something like intellectual diversity. And I guess, you know, the same issue I had last week and that I had now is really what is designed then? What is the recourse? You know, you spoke about like a liaisonship. I don't see that in this resolution. I just see like ideals and. Again, you know, I don't think that I voted for anything in the past that has just been sort of like for, you know, something in theory that I didn't feel like had like a substantive something that could happen after this, like somewhere that this would go. And I guess that's still, you know, I hear what you guys are saying, that this is like about the ideals and that it's not about necessarily something... you know, on one side or another of the political gamut. But I also don't see any sort of like just action being taken as a result of this. So, that's just my comment on it. Oh. And with that, I'm actually just going to call it a question.
Okay. I'm going to call it a question in a second. Is there any dissent? Is that dissent? Okay. So we're going to take a hand vote. All in favor, calling the previous question, please raise your hand. All right. Okay. All opposed, please raise your hands. The motion fails by a count of 9 yeses to 8 noes by my count. Okay, so moving on, Representative Nisargan.
I guess the first thing I have to say is I'm a little frustrated that you talk about a mechanism, but you didn't really add in a mechanism after that's pretty much all we discussed last week. So, and you've talked about proposing a mechanism, so I want to leave it open to you right now, Ahmed. Why don't you propose some sort of, I don't know what the best mechanism is, so can you suggest a mechanism right now?
Let me say, what's that? No, we could do this. Let me know what people think about this, and I guess we're gonna sort of do this a little impromptu here. Neil, would you agree if I said something like, be it finally resolved or be it additionally resolved, whatever, what the word is, that the naming Ahmed Salem in conjunction with next year's Vice President of Internal Operations will create a liaisonship create a liaisonship that will, one, report to the student assembly next semester, mid-semester of next, in the fall, and mid-semester in the spring, about the progress of the resolution, and two, will advocate for the intellectual diversity initiative to be passed or to be considered on the administrative level. And so we'll be under the supervision of the Vice President of Internal Operations. And I would be happy to be also under. I'll be happy to create that with Ryan as well. Would you agree to something?
How about something? I'll propose something simpler right now. How about the student assembly? Be it therefore resolved that student assembly creates a liaisonship to further explore the issue of intellectual diversity.
Well, that'll be my, to who?
Who is this going to?
Representative Nisargan has the speaking time.
Who would this be to, I guess?
He's already here.
That's the one thing that
can you play. I think
I would just propose that it's kind of, I guess it's been our job to do more than last year or two. If we pass a resolution, it's been our job to follow up with the administration.
All right.
I don't know if you need a particular liaison per se. We can maybe specify that it would be up to the next year's e-board.
It's expired. Okay, Representative Levin.
What?
Pass this on to your e-board.
Representative Levin.
Well, first of all, most of the positions that already addressed, other than the rest of the respondents. Most of you already addressed it, but
I really wish everyone would stop. So I've heard this from both sides of the political spectrum. I really wish people would stop referring to it as a political resolution. Just reading it, it's really not. And it's coming from a moderate, whether or not people believe me or not. This is no way political. I just if you would bring this to any undergraduate just walking along on the exam or something, it's not political. Regarding mechanisms, that was my initial reservation or concern last week. And upon talking to you, Ahmed, and hearing what you're all saying and whatnot, it seems to me that, I guess I would say that it is enough for me without necessarily putting in some kind of mechanism here. Sounds like you want this, and then with this you can go on to then work with different areas of campus and whatnot. And I understand that, and I think with this initiative, it's hard to make a pinpoint either relationship or ad hoc committee or something like that. It's not so black and white like that. It's not so straightforward. So, and regarding the other thing, I guess the resolution being appropriate or not, I mean, I'm looking at it sort of like a sense of body resolution, which is in our charter, which has been done before. I know people were mentioning before that, you know, we as assembly decided not to entertain or pass resolutions like this. That's just false. I think that it's everything here is, number four. That was the other thing I had a question for you. Student assembly funds, selection of speakers and allocation of university and or student assembly funds for speakers, blah, 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 must observe the principle of diversity of thought and promote intellectual pluralism. So, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, for example, the Cornell Republicans, I mean, if you plan on bringing Ann Coulter, I don't know if it was done 2 years ago or not, that you apply for SSB funding for that, right? That wouldn't be consistent with number four. I think number four is not feasible or is not appropriate.
I'm sorry.
I mean, are you gonna regulate what your speaker is going to say? I mean,
No. All it means, all number four is saying, is that that there should be no discrimination. That people can bring on discrimination. Sort of if they feel that they were discriminated based on their political affiliation, like based on the type of speaker they want to bring, that they can bring that forward. Now, if it hasn't been a problem, that is correct, but we think that that's something that should be stated more clearly. Like, we do not accept discrimination as a student assembly in the allocation of funds based on political affiliation of the speaker.
Yeah, and that's just to jump in and kind of reiterate something that you said, because I kind of ran out of time with Neil, but it's like, as far as the liaison goes, I think we would have a ready-made liaison if the assembly passes, and a lot, because as the president of the SA, it would be his job, because this is kind of specific to seeing at the administration, letting us know how they feel about this, how they're going to further pursue it. I think that'd be kind of a ready-made liaisonship there with the president of the SA.
Okay, yeah. But again, I wasn't worried about that right now, but I mean, I think it's fine to treat this as a sense of body resolution, how I thought, you know, how I look.
Representative Roizen. It's already been extended by almost 2 minutes. I let it go for pretty far. Representative Dina.
Oh, no.
Are you yielding your time to Representative Levin?
Well, I guess just to continue, I don't know if we settled number four.
Yeah.
I don't think that, I mean, if SSC funds, I mean, I would say I would strike this. I would, no, I don't.
Did SIC fund Ann Coulter?
Or were they going to?
Oh, yeah, no. That's, as I said, it hasn't been a problem, but we're saying that it should be explicitly stated.
But I don't know if that's necessarily appropriate. If different organizations have different, they're entitled to their thoughts, their diversity of thought.
Ryan, I don't know how you interpret it. It's not saying that if you're a Republican, you have to bring a Democrat to speak. Like, that's not what this is saying at all.
No, but it's saying that you can't.
Point of order, this is back and forth. Can you please stop them from yielding, like, in this uncontrolled fashion, to have, like, all the speakers speaking at once? So.
It's up to the speaker to tell.
Hold on.
It's up to you as the speaker to tell him to stop speaking over you. I mean, if you allow him to do that, I mean.
Sorry, I mean, Ryan, keep going. I apologize. Explain what.
Well, I just interpret it as this limit. This says that a student group who has SAC funding cannot bring a speaker that does not observe the principle of diversity of thought and promote intellectual pluralism.
I don't know how. This is the thing. I don't know how you interpret that.
Like, at all.
I'm not getting how
I
Representative Duke.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I want to stress is obviously I don't think anyone sitting at the table is against the idea. I mean, I think that we all support intellectual diversity. And I think to insinuate that any of us don't is actually insulting. But aside from that, I mean, my one major concern with that is that the university is obviously not promoting a goal of indoctrinating all of its students. And I think that it's demeaning to the university to pass a resolution that doesn't do anything. It doesn't look at any of the problems. There's no mechanism whereby we can study to see if this is, you know, really an issue on campus. I mean, I personally have not had any experience. We're going by anecdotal evidence, which is not to say I don't believe it, but this resolution doesn't provide any evidence, solid evidence, and it provides no mechanism for the future. So I see this as another thing that we're you know, talking about, and if we did pass it, that it would be another thing that we would wave around to the university, and it would almost kind of be insulting for them because that would be us insinuating that we think that they're really trying to indoctrinate certain principles, which is certainly not the case, and it doesn't provide any mechanism or any committee or anything to be done in the future about the issue.
I just want to say, and I think we can't follow, but I don't think,
no.
I want to apologize to the government.
She has a question and needs to answer.
Okay.
Right?
All I wanted to say is that I apologize if that was insinuated at all. I think if any of the speakers insinuated, I think it's probably just out of frustration. But I want to say, like, officially on the record, we do not want to insinuate anything, any item that you just mentioned, either towards the university or to anybody here. This is merely saying, like I said, that we support this. And I tried to emphasize that last week, right? That this isn't saying that we specifically didn't bring up grievances based on anecdotal evidence, whatever, because we didn't want to insinuate that. This all, like, I think officially all we mean by this is we support this. And if we can make the if there's any anybody who's uncomfortable with any language in here and does think that something insinuates something insulting, I definitely hear it, and we could take care of that right now because we definitely do not want to insinuate.
Representative, Romney.
Yeah, just a point of inquiry: was there an amendment proposed?
No, there was no official motion to make an amendment.
Can I motion?
Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever amendment you want, you can motion.
I suggest that you yield your time to Ahmed so that he can explain to motion.
I mean, I don't know how to put this, but I think Ryan articulated, like, that there is no amendment to be, like, there is no liaison to be created because it's such a tough call to make. That who the, like, I think that it has to be worked with someone who's passionate about the resolution, present in myself and other people who are going to be here next year, and the VP Bias, who has himself said, like, the best way to go about this is this. I mean, I'm going to yield, because Neil's only brought up, I'll yield, I don't know, can we yield again? Can I yield to you now?
No.
I mean, can I ask Neil to answer, like, do you think the amendment's still in the form?
No.
I can't.
Okay, the first speaker's list is now empty. Does anyone else wish to speak for the first time? You were on the speaker's list, Representative Roizen.
I was never here when the academic bill of integrity was discussed. I'm not really sure I understand the issue. Was it basically just that it was too, like, partisan?
For the past 4 years, it's been brought up. Every time it's either been voted against or tabled indefinitely because it was created by a conservative man named David Horowitz.
That's not fair. That's not a reason why people voted.
This is why people voted against
not
it.
Not necessarily.
No, they
wasn't.
Hold on, everybody, be quiet for a second. People said, "I am voting against this because it is a conservative movement."
No, when you vote no, you don't say why you're voting
no. She asked why it was voted down before.
No, I don't understand the debate. I don't understand why everyone's so against
it. I'm explaining the context of the Academic Bill of Rights. People were against it because they viewed it as part of a guy named David Horowitz, part of his conservative movement. This is not the Academic Bill of Rights. It's the same. I think you guys would agree when it's the same type of idea. They're trying. I mean, you guys can explain this more in a second. They're trying to dissociate themselves from it, but people are still concerned because that Academic Bill of Rights has been explicitly stated to be by David Horowitz himself, the creator, to be kind of a conservative movement. So.
You're simplifying it very complex argument. There's a lot.
But I mean, you guys can discuss that further if you want. But I just wanted to give her a brief overview.
Can I ask what the other issues are? Like, everyone's saying that in theory it sounds like a good idea. So I'm just, are people worried that it won't do anything? That it's just like.
We're going to, I mean, if people are on the speakers list when we come to them and they want to speak on it, that's fine, but, sure. You can yield to one person if you like.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think there are other issues besides that you're not just calling it the partisan issue. It sort of makes a statement, this statement that seems to be contextualized among other ones that are more of a reaction. It's sort of saying, we need intellectual diversity. So our question is, why is Cornell a place that does not have intellectual diversity? Is it a place where we have problems with professors? It's a place where free speech is limited? It's a place where we have, you know, a limited spectrum of things like this? And
or is it empowering to students? And not necessarily that
the right. So I think the differing perspective is some people respond to it having some sort of partisan rhetoric. Other people respond to it sort of having this unclear statement. And there's also a little thing. I personally respond to it because I'm offended by the way it sort of conflates diversity with, you know, this idea of open arts, open doors of minds, even though the speakers have just said that this is not going to fit in the bias-related protocol, this like bias-related incident protocol that's part of that initiative. So it's really, I mean, I'm going into debate here, but those are some concerns why people might have with that.
Okay, does anyone else wish to speak for the first time? Representative Butish.
I mean, I'm still just having some issues that I really have been having trouble putting my finger on. But for example, the sentence that towards the end, in the event that information is expressly hidden, because it disagrees with the professor's views, we feel that this constitutes indoctrination on becoming a Cornell University. Now, I'm just not sure what, how this document, so is a professor not supposed to state his views because then a student will think that he'll get downgraded because, you know, they don't agree? I mean, I know this is saying that, you know, that students shouldn't be afraid of, you know, to be downgraded, but that's just something that, you know, professor, it will be grading your papers, and I mean, I don't think you can say that students should not be scared of your professors, like, because they're great. I mean, that's just one thing, and I know that this is what it's trying to address, but I don't think it really does an effective job necessarily at that.
Well, yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No,
cool. No, if you're done.
Yeah, I yield my time. I mean, I don't think I really expressed it clearly, but that's because I'm still having trouble in my own mind.
Is that, well, I have a very simple explanation. Yeah, it's not. Yeah, I think that all this means right here, information is hidden. What that's referring to is to say that a professor is really in favor of X, whatever, just X principle. But then there were statistics of some kind that maybe undercut that a little bit. We're saying that we think that person would be obligated to bring that information forward as well. So that you don't, so it's more of
and that the professor.
Exactly, right. So the professor shouldn't hide information that might undercut his own political position or theoretical standpoint. Yeah, I'm not talking about anything. Maybe it was strictly professor based like that.
Time is expired. If you guys are having this side conversation, it's kind of better. No, it's fine. Just keep your voices down a little bit. I'm going to start limiting speaking time to 1 minute. Representative Fernandez.
I'm going to motion to call the question.
Second.
Second.
All right, so I'm going to call the question. A second. Is there any dissent? All right, seeing none. Sponsors of the resolution, you guys have 1 minute for a closing statement.
Okay. Yeah. No. I think we had a good discussion today. I basically kind of gave my spiel a little bit earlier. I would reiterate. I would encourage people to vote based on what you know is the right thing. Don't be afraid to kind of rise above and beyond any type of labeling issues. And there again, I would encourage you to, if you're thinking about voting against it, in these last couple of seconds, I would encourage you to really think about why are you voting against it? What are you voting no specifically? And really just ask yourself if that really outweighs. I mean, for instance, we have freedom of religion in the United States, but that doesn't stop people from, when there's times of that and doubt or there's concerns about that, from just reiterating those principles. We're not meaning to insinuate anything negative about the university. This is more of a statement. So a very we see it as a very positive statement and one in the right direction. I would encourage people to look at it from that viewpoint and go into it like that. And we appreciate your time. Thank you for listening to it.
All right. Do any members of the community wish to speak on this matter? Austin.
I was going to say something during the debate, but just to make, you know, just wrap up. As far as the political aspect of it, you know, I fully support everything in here. You know, I have very liberal views, and if I had gone to a college back home in one of the many conservative colleges in my state, I would want some mechanism to be here so I could appeal if something like this would happen to me. And it seems like this biased response program is specifically designed to do this. And I look at like the mission statement of it, and it says that, you know, it's protection of all forms of discrimination, including race, religion, sex, and political affiliation and youth. So I don't quite understand why the biased response program is ineffective.
Any other members of the community wish to speak?
No.
You already give community members an half chance.
Yeah. We have a charter change. Parliamentarian
Asbury.
I just wanted to echo really quick what Brenda said before, which was that with the presenting questions and the perspective of not so much what we're concerned with the university, this is the student summit, and the fact that they would come to have a student to have some of the students have to sort of symbolic and make sure that the people who on the day for it today said that maybe half of them have to know the exact same solution to have somewhere here. So I think that's just.
Okay, let's say one more member of the community. No. All right, clerk, please call the roll.
Basil?
Yes.
Udish?
Pass.
Foster?
Stan.
Coombs?
Yes.
Dina? Duke?
Pass.
Ehrlich? Sorry. Fernandez.
Pass.
Gay.
Good.
Greenberg.
No.
Hartman.
Yes.
Leonard.
No.
Miss
Argan. Yes.
A. Salem.
Yes.
R. Salem.
Yes.
Kent. Self.
No.
Flickland.
Yes.
Con. Yeah,
for me.
Okay.
And there's all
three passes.
No. What name was that?
Budish.
Okay.
Budish is no.
Fernandez.
No.
Did you do all the passes?
There's more passes.
Shh. Did you do all the passes?
I thought I got
them. If you didn't vote, raise your hand. Okay. All right. Okay, so by a vote of 8 yeses to 5 noes to 5 abstentions. Susan?
You can vote to make a tie.
Well,
no,
what are you talking about? No. Okay, but let me read the vote. By a vote of 8 yeses to 5 noes to 5 abstentions, the resolution fails.
8 of 18.
What?
The abstentions don't count towards the majority, so the 8 is the majority of the
council.
Yes, they do. No. No, because
it's not we've been operating for the rest of the year.
Point of inquiry.
Do you have the rules with you?
Look it up online.
Yeah,
I'm gonna have a motion to revote. For those who abstained, if you understand now that your vote, well, Kwame is the chair. He can do whatever he wants now. Kwame, you can decide.
Everyone stop speaking. Ari wants to get the rules. I'd rather not because there was a motion to revote. I'm just going to.
Okay. Point of the motion. Like when Adam brought up their thing, I wanted to revote like you said. Because it already occurred, and I think you have to wait a meeting.
That's why I'm waiting for the rules because I'm not sure. Everybody, we're going into an executive recess for like 30 seconds while Ari runs around.
I think 30 people will stop.
Do we even have to, are we even going to have enough people here to go on the party?
Yes, we have enough people.
Stay here, don't leave. We're going to come back right now.
No, but we need to add an item 2/3 of the assembly to vote.
You voted yes, you have the ability to say tie it. 9 out of 8.
You're saying if the abstentions don't count. No, if the abstentions don't count, then it doesn't count.
There's no sun coming out. No one's going to read us tomorrow.
All right. Yeah. No, you don't need to count because I mean, 30.
No, but I just want to count. So, 1, 2, 3, 4.
So you could add up the numbers.
8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19.
There's a motion to revote on the floor. I don't know if people understood the message,
but you can't motion to revote.
Yeah. It's actually.
There's no motion.
Okay, one motion we can say.
I believe yes. Someone has to vote no to reconsider.
Okay, one motion reconsider.
There's been a motion to reconsider the resolution. However, that would be something for you guys to do next year. But according to Robert's Rules of Order, abstentions do not count as a no vote, which means that the resolution actually passes with 8 yeses to 5 noes to 5 abstentions.
Point of inquiry.
Yeah.
I'm curious to know whether members who abstained understood that as such. Did they understand that their votes were not contributing more than the majority of the debate?
Absolutely not, because we haven't...
Just in case you don't know that.
But we have... Why can't you revote? Hasn't there been...
Okay.
There
have
been other instances where we've been voting. Yeah. We're
going to revote because there was confusion about how the votes were cast. And I mean, if that confusion basically swayed the result of the resolution, so I'm finding that it's a good thing to revote in this case. So, clerk, please call the roll again. Please keep that rule in mind. Abstentions do not count as no votes.
Basil.
Yes.
Budish.
No.
Foster.
No.
Coon.
Yes.
Dina.
You can still abstain, though. Where is she here?
Is she in the bathroom?
She's in the bathroom.
Oh.
Duke. No. Fernandez.
No.
Gay.
No.
Greenberg.
No.
Yes.
Lavin.
Yes.
Leonard.
No.
Zargan.
Yes.
Aiken.
Yes.
Arnfield.
Yes.
Self.
No.
Bloodline.
Yes.
We're going to wait for Representative Dina.
Oh. I have nine.
We're waiting for Representative Dina to return so that she can cast her vote.
I think it's fair to say
what?
No, she's I'm on time.
Oh, she is?
Yeah.
I would say.
Oh, wait, just wait until she comes back.
Just wait until she comes back.
Give her time.
Are we sure that she's in position to sleep?
Two years ago, last meeting. Oh, yeah, that was pretty.
That was
good.
What?
We sewed it.
Yeah, because
oh, yeah. I'm not sure. I'm right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank God.
Did you see that?
Remy, can you go
get her from the bathroom? Yeah, I think that Mad Sex could just go at knock on that girl's bathroom door.
All right. That's PR.
He knocks on the bathroom door.
He just walked out of it.
This would happen in the last meeting.
I'm not sure what the fuck. That's just another
thing.
Okay, Representative Dina.
We're revoting
because. Well, who told you? Oh, okay. Well, as the chair, it's my position to make sure it was adequately explained because I have no clue what they said outside. Not even sure why they were speaking to you outside. But anyway, so we're revoting because several members did not understand that abstentions do not count as no's. So I found that, you know, since it could have affected the outcome of the resolution, that we would revote. So now we're waiting for you to cast your vote. All right. So by vote of 10-8, the resolution passes. On to resolution 43. Let's make this quick.
Good thing I'm getting the hell out of here.
Also in the academic way.
Yay for intellectual diversity.
Environmental.
Woohoo!
Mind mental shift. Oh, crap. You have to do this. Mark, I forgot all about this. I guess we'll have to do this. We should do this.
How many let's go to the first one?
Huh?
No, you can sit. I'm not turning. Then you sit.
Okay.
Guys, sorry, this will just take a second, and it's only important that everyone just listens for a minute because this is a charter change that would require teachers to the assembly to pass. Again, this is taking liaisons to three of the five, the group that we buy on Friday, we have some 22 groups. This is making liaisons to Tuesday tonight, Flip Day, and the Tuesday Leadership Program, which would give members of the assembly a chance to really be connected with these groups, not only in terms of their budgets, but just in terms of their inner workings. If any of you guys can serve on the boards of other organizations would know, and that is basically what this resolution is proposing. I really, really hope to have that we've had issues with these groups in the past where we needed to know what was going on in their executive board as it affected their violent funding, and we didn't, because we didn't have SA members who were privy to their conversation.
And once again, this is the first step. All the groups in complete agreement, 100% support this. They want us to pass this, and obviously, I mean, this is to make sense for action for how violent funding will be going next month. So, there you go.
Okay, Vice President Slickman.
I motion to change the resolution, amend it, so that the fourth whereas clause says the charter of the Slope Day Programming Board instead of the steering committee.
Oh, sorry, you're right. Yes, thank you.
Do you find that
memory?
I'd like to...
Oh, you know what? You know what? I'm not... Well, number one, there are no more fine or anything friendly. I'm gonna consider that a typo, and we're not voting on that.
Okay, you're right.
Anything else?
No, I think it's good. Motion to call the question.
There's some other typos.
Okay.
Where
are they?
First of the four. Number two, I think there's a recent position for collegiate readership program.
Number two of what?
On the first page, item number two on the collegiate readership program. Where it says with information leadership, I think that's with information about leadership.
Okay, Connie, is it, when you wrote this, was it directly taken from the charter, or is...
Yeah, just copy it. Wait, number two?
On the front page. Yeah.
I'm sorry, I just don't... Oh, okay. Yeah, I just copied and pasted it, I'm pretty sure. But, okay, information...
Okay, so information of...
We'll just consider that typo also, which can just be correct. Okay,
What's the other
type of?
No, I can't complete it. I feel kind of petty, but number three, these distribution materials.
Oh. Okay.
Adam and I find it friendly.
Typos. Okay. There's been a call to question in the second. Is there any dissent?
Call for unanimous.
Okay. There's been a call for unanimous consent for this resolution, but it's a charter change, so we do need to call the roll, unfortunately. So do you guys have a concluding statement? No? Okay. Community member? No? Okay. Clerk, please call the roll.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Fernandez. Yes. Gay. Yes. 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 16 yeses to 1 no. The resolution passes.
It's
been a motion to adjourn. I'm not accepting that motion.
It's
going to be SA
president forever.
All right, this meeting is adjourned. Good luck with this.
I don't agree with you at all.
Well, sure they do, because you...
When Ahmed emailed IMA at 11 o'clock at night, right, and I called, hey, said, hey, Mr. Scrutiny, what do you need to do? What do I need to do to make you vote for this resolution?
Right.
And I said, put in a mechanism. He completely ignored me.
Basically, what this does is this shows these people who write about like intellectual diversity that we are behind them, and that if
this has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.